Hello, and welcome to our 2AC podcast about what it takes to be successful in today's world. Today we are talking to John Pritikin. Thank you for coming to talk to us today.
John Pritikin.
Oh, it's my honor.
John Pritikin runs a nonprofit speaking event program for children and young adults called Feel the Power. It positively motivates them to make the kind of important daily choices that affirm the value they place in themselves and in others.
We would first like to begin with some questions about John Pritikin's childhood and background.
Where did you grow up?
I was born in Rockford, Illinois, but I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area, where I live now.
Were you involved in any athletics, clubs, student government, or anything when you were younger?
No student government, but I did play some sports. I was terrible. I played a little high school football even, and I pretty much played left out. I mean, I was that one position I played. I was the worst athlete.
Did you have a dream job growing up?
Yeah, I think when I was younger, I wanted to be a police officer, not because I like donuts, just because I wanted to help people. And so that was kind of in the back of my mind, something I've always wanted to try to do.
Who was your role model growing up?
Oh, that's a great question. Who was my role model growing up? I think I've had a couple. I mean, as a kid growing up, I used to love the TV show Chips. I know they just came out the movie and stuff, but I used to love those guys I always looked up to. But then people in my life, my mom has been a huge influence in my life, just gigantic. And she was always positive, always there for me. And then when I was in high school, I went to a school assembly, and a guy came. He bent a bar. He ripped a telephone directory, a telephone book in half. And when I got to college, I called him. He mentored me. And he's still doing this. He's like 60-something years old, still ripping phone books and rolling up frying pans. And he was a big part of my life. And the third person that was a huge influence is when I was 18, I had a girlfriend. And she was a super influential in my life. We went to college together. She helped me with my homework throughout college, or did my homework. I'm just joking. But then this May 13th, we've been married 22 years.
Did you ever think about becoming a public speaker?
I did when I was in high school, when he came and spoke. It like something sparked in my heart. I thought, man, I want to help people who are kind of going through what I'm going through, but then also let other people know that, you know, words hurt, and try to, like, kind of bring light to the situation. So before the whole anti-bullying thing went around, it was so popular, I started talking about this. I remember someone said to me, say, you won't be able to make a career talking about being nice to each other. You know, that was back when I first started doing this in 94, and so it's been a long time. And so I'm still doing it, and so I keep going forward, and just want to try to help as many people as possible. That's the reason why I started all this.
Were you comfortable with presenting when you were a child?
You want to repeat that question?
Were you comfortable?
There? Yeah.
Were you comfortable with presenting when you were a child?
Well, I was comfortable. Say that one more time. I'm so sorry.
Were you comfortable presenting when you were a child?
Like talking in front of people and stuff?
Yeah, no.
Definitely not. I think speech was a problem for me. And I think that I was always like a friendly person, kind of outgoing, even though that my speech was probably my hindrance. I still tried to be friendly. But I think standing in front of people, it wasn't something that was in my mind. But when that guy spoke, I just realized I wanted to do that. I wanted to help people.
In your opinion, what was the most life-changing moment of your life?
Oh, man. I want to say there hasn't been, one particular thing, like, okay, that was it, or that was it. I think it's been a multiple of things that shaped me who I am. I think I said the people I've met, when my daughter was born. You go down throughout my life, there's always been different series of moments that have really made me who I am. The choices that you make today are the realities that you walk through tomorrow. And I think that you make good decisions, good things will happen. You know, I've made mistakes. You know, things haven't gone wrong. But I think you always kind of have that attitude, just because I make a mistake doesn't mean I am a mistake. or just because I failed doesn't mean I'm a failure. So I think throughout life you kind of keep going forward. So along the way, you'll have these things that come up, these pivotal things that pop up, and they kind of make you who you are. So I'd say it was one moment. I don't think I had that, but it's been a series of multiple things that made me who I am.
Did you have a favorite class in school?
Say that one more time. So sorry, that phone broke up.
Did you have a favorite class in school?
Oh, man, favorite class in school. I didn't really care for school too much. It was kind of a, I would say the best thing, I always say this about working out, and I say about school, the best thing about school is being done. for me, it was just like, it was really, really difficult. The friendships I made, like, later in life, like college and university, was awesome. But even in high school, there's some people who really put, influence in my life. But I had a favorite class. I think I look back, I still like a little bit of history and government stuff. I still kind of like, I like politics, I like watching it. I don't like arguing it, but I like to watch all of it from the sideline.
Now we would like to move on to some questions about John Pritikin's career.
What is the best part about being a motivational speaker?
I was just doing the interviews. I did all these interviews in a country called Bhutan, which is above India, up by Mount Everest and the Himalayas, and they were just asking the same question. And for me, people go, is it cool because you either bend and roll things up, or is it the travel and stuff? It comes down to the people that you meet, the friends that you make. My favorite part of my school assembly is not actually the speaking part, but standing at the door at the end saying goodbye to everybody. That's the part I love, because it's a time where I can connect with the audience and connect with the students that are just sat through what I just talked about or talked about my life. And so I think that's my favorite part about being a motivational speaker, is hopefully that you can make an influence in someone's life.
How do you feel when you see kids' reactions to your story?
You said, what was that? The phone's cutting out. I'm sorry, I'm only hearing half of it. I'm so sorry about that.
How long did it take you to rip a phone book in half?
That was actually one of the hardest things, the phone book. So the phone book, when you rip a phone book out, there's a little bit of a technique, I gotta be honest. When you push the papers together in the middle, it makes a V, and that V helps you rip the phone book. But that was one of the hardest things for me to figure out. When I first started doing it, I couldn't bend a bar. It took me a long time to get enough strength to get to that point. The first thing I ever did, and don't ever do this at home, is I broke bricks with my head. That was the first thing I ever did, like doing like strongman stuff.
How do you feel when you see kids' reactions to your story?
It melts my heart. That's kind of what you want to hopefully, it means you're connecting with people. I always say, I'm not the best communicator in the world. There's a lot better communicators than me. But I always want to be the best connector. You always want to connect with your crowd that you're speaking to. And when people are showing emotion, that means you're connecting with them. It doesn't mean people who aren't showing emotions, they're not connecting with, but it just, there's something going on in their life, and so there's that empathy. So it really touches my heart.
What was one of the hardest times of your life?
That's a great question. I think growing up as a child, that was probably one of the hardest things I had to go through. You always all have struggles in life. You always go through those times that are tough. But I think as you get older, you realize they don't last forever. And that's why I always try to tell students, sometimes don't last forever. They do get better. And I think growing up as a child was the toughest thing I've ever been through. There's this legendary story about a guy who was shipwrecked on an island, and built a hut, saved some things from a shipwreck, and made a fire, and all this stuff. He's walking down the beach one day. He hears a noise, and the fire somehow spread and caught his hut up in flames. And everything he saved from the shipwreck, and everything he's made to survive on this island. He just drops down the sand, just crying. And after a couple hours of crying on this beach in this island in the South Pacific, he sees on the horizon, he sees a ship. And it gets closer and closer and closer and comes up to the island. He runs out to the water. He's greeted by the captain. He goes, "I've been here for so long. I'm so glad to see you." And he asks the captain, he goes, "How did you even know I was here?" and the captain said the smoke from your fire. What he thought was the worst thing in the world is actually what saved him. And you know, I look back on my life, and I think the tough things that I've gone through is actually what saved me. It's made me who I am today.
Do you have any regrets? If so, what?
Yeah, I have one big regret for sure. I didn't tell, like, a lot of people what I went through. I held everything on the inside. If I would have told somebody, they could have helped in and stepped in. That's why I always tell students, you know, if something's going wrong in your life or people aren't being nice to you or you feel like giving up, talk to someone. Because there's people who are there who want to help. And so that's the one big regret. I look back in life. I wish I would have told people. And I think the second thing is, I think being a victim of a lot of stuff, you're afraid to step in sometimes because you're afraid that it's gonna get worse. And you know what? I wish I would have stepped into some more other situations where I saw other people being put down because I could have helped out. And I didn't because of the fear of it getting worse for myself. So I regret that.
Do you have any advice for future motivational speakers?
Yeah, I have a couple. I say one, always pursue your dreams. Just follow your dreams. Keep going forward. You know, just take it one step at a time. I said it earlier, and I said it again, always be a good connector. Don't have to worry about the communication side. You want to communicate, but just try to always connect with your audience. In business side of it, don't pursue the connection, pursue relationships. The friendships and relationships that you make when you're traveling and in this business of what you do will last you a lifetime. You know, the connection just gets you a speaking engagement, and that's not my interest. And I'm interested in making friendships and relationships that last a lifetime. So always pursue the relationships. And lastly, I have a rule. Always try to reply to someone within 24 hours. Text, message, email. We always try to, unless I'm traveling. So I always try to reply to people back in 24 hours. So someone who is getting into this business, I would say that. So make sure you reply back to everybody.
Are there any lessons or memories you would like to share?
I think I've shared a couple, you know, in the fact that, I don't do a lot of questions and answers when I'm talking after the assembly. Sometimes I get to, depends on the schedule of the day. But I'll never forget, I was in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and I'm doing an assembly at the high school, and we had a little defense, so I did a question and answer. And at the end, the boy in the back raised his hand. He said, "John, if you saw the guy who tripped you in the hall that day when you were young, in third grade," he goes, "would you break him like a bat and roll him up like a frying pan?" And I was laughing. I said, "No, that guy caused me a lot of hurt, a lot of pain. And he didn't just trip me, he caused a lot of other things in my life." And I said, "If I saw that guy today, I walk up to him, I look into his eyes, I point his face, and I would look at him and say, 'I forgive you.' And say, 'What you did to me wasn't right, but I'm going to let it go.'" And that's forgiveness. It's not saying what you did to me is right, it's just letting it go. You know, people are going to hurt you throughout your whole life, but you always got to learn how to forgive. And that scar on my chin reminds me to forgive people every day. Doesn't mean I'm always going to trust them, but I always got to let it go. So that's the one thing I would like to share.
So what is the story that you share with the kids that you speak to? Can you share that story with us?
Yeah, so I share my personal story of when I was growing up, I didn't have a lot of friends, having speech problems. Being by myself a lot growing up, and how a teacher held me after class and even told me that I was a throwaway and I would never be able to graduate or go to college and all that. But how no matter what happens in your life, you can't believe those lies. You got to keep going forward. And how the little boy never gave up. So I tell my story in the third person and don't let everybody know it's me to the very end. But how. How he didn't give up, he kept going through, and he went to a new school. In fact, it was pretty bad at that school, he had to go to a new one. And these kids said, "We don't want you with us." They used the R word and said, "You're retarded, go by yourself." And he felt like giving up, but he didn't. And there's one part I don't tell my assembly that I'll share with you is that day I went home and I took my stepdad's gun out, and that was the end of my life. I was done. I couldn't handle it anymore. And I'm so glad I didn't, because you know what? That would have been a permanent decision to temper problems at that time. My tough times got better. And I always want people to know that tough times do get better, like I said earlier. And so, and how I went on with my life and went to, wanted to go to college. I remember my grades were terrible. I graduated high school with a 1.8 GPA. I got 560 on my SATs combined. That was my combined score. And you get 400 for just putting your name on the test. I mean, I was just like, there's no way anyone was going to take me for, I don't know what happened. The school said, we'll let you come on academic probation. So if you keep your grades up, you can stay. If not, we're kicking out after the first semester. And I went to this guy that I really respected. And I told this guy what I wanted to do. And this guy who I kind of admired looked at me and goes, you will never be able to do that. I can't understand you. Because you barely made through school, you know, and the university's harder. He goes, I'm not trying to be mean. He goes, I'm trying to be realistic. And I realized that day, you always got to be careful who you share your dreams with. But how I went to the university and I struggled and I fought through, and then second year I was at the top of my class and graduated. And that's, I'm going on today to speak to over 8.5 million students around the world.
Do you think if that teacher never said what he said to you when you were in school, do you think anything would be different now?
We're writing a book right now. We're just talking about that. I think if she... I know... Let me say this. I probably wasn't the easiest student in the world. I know that. I know there was issues. I was one of the first kids ever diagnosed with ADD in the United States. And I'm in a textbook over it. That's what they tell me. And so I know there was probably some issues I had that made me not the easiest student. I don't think I would change anything that happened to me. Anything that was said to me, I don't think I would change, because again, it shaped me and molded me the person who I am today. And so, but I know if we can go back in time, I know that teacher probably would take it back, because I don't think she meant it the way it came across. And we all have done and said things that we regret, and that's probably something she regrets if she can go back in time.
So the point of our podcast is we're talking about success. And so in your job and your motivational speaking career, what does success mean to you in that area?
I'm pretty fortunate to have a really cool family that has done a lot. I've done a lot of cousins and aunts and uncles. A lot of cousins, they all went to Harvard University and all... lawyers and very successful people, or doctors, and you know, very wealthy. They all have influence. And in the eyes of my family, I'm probably not successful. I don't have a big house. I don't make six figures. You know, I don't do this. But in my eyes, I get to travel the world with my family, talking to millions of students. And we've seen a lot of people's lives change to do what we get to do. So in my eyes, I feel like I'm successful. So I think success is not saying, it's not the things that you have or that you own. I think it's what's in your heart. And I've learned this, I can't compare myself to other people. I am born an original. I'm not gonna die a copy. I'm not gonna try to do something I never was meant to be born to do. I'm born to do this.
How does it feel to change lives?
Oh, it's phenomenal. It's like a high. It's pretty cool. It's pretty amazing, especially when you get a message from someone on Instagram or, you know, or they talk to you at the end of the school assembly. I was doing the assembly not too long ago in a different state, and I really felt my heart. I was just in this school assembly. So I contacted the school and said, I really feel strong that to do an assembly for you guys. They're like, I don't know. I'll do it for free. I'll even find myself in. I feel something in my heart. I'm supposed to be at your school. And they're like, well, okay, we'll have you come and do it. And so I did the assembly. And at the end, this boy walks up to me and goes, I cleaned out my locker. I cleaned up my house. I was going to kill myself today. And he just fell on my arms and started crying. Well, then he walked away, and this girl walked and said, this is on a Monday morning. And I flew in from Taiwan to do this assembly, so it was just a crazy schedule. And I was tired, but I'll never forget. She walks up to me, just was eighth grade girl was just crying, and she said that she had planned to end her life on Friday, but she felt that she needed to wait until Monday. She goes, John, you saved my life. Well, the next day, I go to the gym to work out, and I'm all jet lagged. It's like, you know, 6 in the morning. I'm finishing up my work. I was at the gym at 4. And I get a message on my fan page on Facebook from a parent saying, can we talk to you about what you told the school about my son? Because when someone says something like that to me, that they want in their life, I let the school know so they're not by themselves. And so the dad called me, and I talked to him on the phone. He said, tell me what happened, I told him. And he started breaking down and started crying because we should be having a funeral this week, but we didn't because you were at my son's school. And so, I mean, that's what I live for, is to be able to make an influence in someone's life.
Okay, so now that we've asked a bunch of serious questions about your work and your life, we would now like to ask some fun questions about your life outside of work.
If a genie were to grant you 3 wishes, what would you choose?
If I can have 3 wishes?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I don't know if I've ever been asked that before. Number one, if I could take away hurt and pain, have that, like that, that ability, like the ability I had to roll the frying pan, that strength. If I could have some kind of technique or something that would just take hurt and pain that was doing people's lives, I would like to have that. Like a magic power or something like that, you know, or a superhero power. 2, it would be resources, unlimited resources to do what we need to do. And 3, I've never been asked this before, so I don't know. Great health.
Alright, this is a sort of odd question, but do you prefer soggy or crunchy cereal?
Okay, so I like O's, you know, O's cereal.
Yeah.
And sometimes I put it in there and I let it soak because it gets a little soggy. So I think I'm but then sometimes I like Captain Crunch, crunchy though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to both.
If you were on an island and could only bring 3 things, what would they be?
You said 3 things? Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
My iPad so I can watch Netflix and Amazon and Hulu and all that. I mean, I've never been asked these questions before. Depends what kind of island that I wouldn't mind bringing my golf clubs but to play golf. And another person. I hate being by myself.
What is your greatest fear and why?
I probably don't show this too much publicly, but I battle anxiety a little bit. I was okay, so I had panic attacks. And I've gotten through and gotten really good about it. And so I think that's one of my biggest fears, is like that fear of it coming on. I think it's something I always struggle with. And the fear of being alone. I think the fear of failing. I always think there's 3 types of fears that block people's lives. The fear of people, the fear of failure, and the fear of the future. And I think that fear of failing has always been a big part of my life.
Is there any more questions for our guest?
What is the most interesting place you've ever traveled to?
Connecticut.
Repeat.
Oh, joking. I'm just joking. Let's see. The most interesting place. I mean, I was just last week in Bhutan. I mean, that's pretty cool. That was like from about 8,500 feet. You know, I was there with the as a guest of the government. I got to fiberment Mount Everest. In fact, I took all these pictures of it. It was pretty cool. I do a lot in the Middle East. I don't know the coolest place. I do schools every year in Bali, which is part of Indonesia.
Yeah.
I was there.
Cool.
But nothing beats Connecticut.
What's the biggest crowd you've ever spoken in front of?
Now, this sounds silly. You ready? It was in India. It was 1.1 million people.
Wow.
That's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah, it was insane.
Do you speak any other languages?
No, I use translators. I mean, I can get by in a couple languages, like joking around, and I say enough that people think I know, but I really don't. Nah, I have to say I don't.
Thank you for calling to talk to us today, Mr. Pritikin.
Oh, it's my honor.
And thank you for tuning in to the first 2AC podcast about what it takes to be successful in the 21st century with John Pritikin.